Welcome to the Owners Collective podcast. I'm your host, Prue Chapman, and I'm here to help you build a better business. Whether you're just starting out or you're looking to grow your global empire, this is the place for you. My mission here is to inspire and educate a new wave of business owners. Business owners that value purpose and planet equally with profit and projections, so that we can truly use business as a force for good. Here, I'll be sharing real-time, real-world strategies that I've learned from mentoring over 15,000 businesses. We'll be covering everything from entrepreneurial mindset and marketing right through to leadership, finances, growing your team, and everything in between. Most importantly, I'll be helping you build the business that's right for you. To get started, download my free guide to starting and scaling your business at theownerscollective.com/start-and-scale. Welcome back, friends. Today, I'm talking with Jade Taylor and Sophie Lawrence Parker, founders of much-loved ice cream brand Donutta. Donutta is an Australian-made sugar-free ice cream with all-natural ingredients, gluten-free, low-lactose, keto and diabetic-friendly, and most importantly, it's delicious. Now, you guys know that I love a good startup story. So listeners, we are going to be covering some good juice from the girls all about their startup story, but we're also going to get into some nitty gritty here. So really covering off on everything from product development and manufacture right through to tackling large supply chains and also retaining brand integrity. So just before we jumped on live here, I was just saying to Sophie and Jade that, you know, product-based business advice can be really hard to come by. So we did want to make this one a mix of, yes, storytelling and focusing in on Donutta, but also giving you guys some kind of like nitty-gritty practical knowledge as well. So I'm sure we are in for a good time. Sophie and Jade, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
I'm glad you're here. So I thought straight up we could just jump in on the name, Donutta. Talk us through, and I actually should check that you guys pronounce it Donutta, but I'd love to know where it came from.
Well, when back in 2000 or late 2017, when Charlotte, it's Jade talking, hi everyone, when Charlotte came to me with the idea of starting this ice cream business. She'd already been playing around a little bit on a kind of low-level scale, producing just out of her home kitchen for some smaller events and kind of testing the market a little bit whether or not this sugar-free ice cream was a good idea to take to market. And back then she'd already named the company or named the business idea Nada. So, of course, Nada translates to nothing and, you know, kind of paying homage to the no sugar content in the ice cream. And we did a little bit of research, and back then when we were talking about the idea of this ice cream business, we always wanted to scale and scale big. So we kind of looked at other markets around the world, and Nada Moo was already trademarked in the US. So we thought, look, let's, you know, we're going to eventually aim big. So we decided to play around with that name a little bit, looking for something that was available on the international stage. And Donutta was a company name that wasn't really used, particularly in the food or FMCG space. So Donutta, of course, then translating to it's nothing, you're welcome, no worries in that. And Charlotte had some friends that were studying Spanish at the time, so she was kind of in and around that language a little bit. And we just love the way that it kind of played on the idea of, kind of enjoying yourself, no worries, you're welcome, and the way that this ice cream could really take that bit of a different form through the name. And we didn't really want to, kind of tie it too much to food per se, so it kind of gives us the option to really branch out with the brand down the track.
So clever. And I love the combination of this word, or what this, the combination of meanings that this word has, because like you say, Donutta, it has this very lighthearted, but you know, it's nothing, you're welcome. It's just got such a great connotation around it. I remember the first time I heard it when I was actually traveling around Spain. It was just like, oh, the girls that I was traveling with, you know, we just used it every second sentence then, Donutta, Donutta. So it does have such a lovely connotation, and also it's like really quite a depth of meaning for what you guys are producing as well.
It's funny because as I joined the business after the girls had already started it. So it was Charlotte and Jade who started the business, and I helped them out in early stages and came on a couple of months later as a financially invested partner. But you know, Charlotte was a longtime friend of mine and showed me the idea of NADA at the start. And it wasn't until she changed the name to Danada that I started becoming really emotionally invested. I think it had just this, you know, it more so than NADA, which also had meaning, it just gave this brand so much personality. And as a brand person and having a brand background, it really spoke to me. And there was something really special about it when she changed the name to Danada.
You're right. And even as we sit here and talk about it, it just naturally puts a smile across my face, remembering those times and connecting with that word. It's super clever and so clever in that it does exactly what it says as well. Now, something that you've mentioned here, obviously we're talking with two of you today, but there are three co-founders. So I'd love to hear, well, first of all, how you came together. We've covered a bit of that off, but also what different skill sets that each of you bring to the table.
Yeah, so Sophie, I'll take this one. It was Jade and Charlotte who started the business together, and Shaz had come up with the ice cream. She was a pastry chef. She was working in New York and came home, and she'd started her own kind of gluten-free business. But she went sugar-free, I think it was in 2017, and she found that there was a real lack in the market of sugar-free treats. And so the business kind of just was born out of, you know, her love of ice cream and not being a sugar-free ice cream on the market. And she brought Jade on. And, you know, so Shaz had that pastry chef background. Jade was currently, were you working in events at the time, Jade, for Bar Pop? And she'd just retired from international hockey career. She was playing for the Hockey Roos. And so those two started it together. And I was just kind of on the side giving some, I was working in an advertising agency at the time, and was giving some kind of marketing advice and helping kind of develop the brand just because I had such an interest in what the girls were doing. So in terms of, you know, what we all bring to the table, I think, you know, I came from that marketing background and was able to contribute that way, and really steamroll the brand side of things. Shaz had the, you know, the food background and the development from the flavor and taste perspective. And I think that's what, kind of gives us an edge. You know, she's fierce in terms of making sure that this product is sugar-free, but it's 100% delicious. You know, there's so many flavors that just don't make the cut because she's so, you know, things that we think, oh, tastes good, it's just not good enough for her. So, yeah, she's really fierce when it comes to the delivery of that delicious ice cream experience. And, you know, Jade was coming from like this team sport background, and, you know, was at the, I think I can speak for her, at the, you know, elite side of her sport. And so, you know, we really say that she's kind of like the driving force behind us, you know, in terms of business and yeah, driving the business forward, and then real team player. So
incredible. So you are all, I mean, there's three really varied skill sets and all each bringing something really unique to the table. It's interesting that you were discussing the flavor there, because all I could think of was the varied amount of people that rave about your ice cream to me. And, you know, from my brother, who's, you know, a CrossFit fanatic that loves, you know, that it's sugar-free, that it's, you know, keto, all of those things, right through to another friend of mine, Jess, who really survives off like donuts and croissants, not too worried about the sugar-free, but it's just actually delicious. So she loves eating it. Mm. So interesting that all of those things come together. Now, one thing that I did want to tap into here is that business partnerships, they definitely call for a lot of additional considerations in business. So, I mean, just putting it straight out on the table, it can be hard to make business partnerships work. So I was wondering how the three of you stay in flow and stay on the same page with one another.
I think, I mean, I guess we touched on it just then, that we each bring such a different skill set, and we're very aware of our own weaknesses and strengths. So I guess the way that we work so well together, I don't think we've never had an argument in, I think, 3.5 years. No, we really bounce off of each other so well. We respect each other's opinions. We discuss things. We've got systems kind of set up in place, although it is one thing that we want to get better at. You know, of course, looking way down the track, if we ever want to exit, you know, we want to set this business up so that it can be passed on, you know, without too much trouble. But I guess the three of us, we originally, when we did start the business, Charlotte ended up moving over east because our manufacturing was over there and it just made sense. So for her to be on the ground over east just really helped with making things happen a little bit faster in terms of production, manufacturing, sourcing ingredients, all that kind of stuff. And Soph was in between LA and Perth. I kind of started in Perth, flirted with the idea of going East Coast as well. And then, of course, COVID happened. So it kind of, we were already working quite remotely anyway, and we'd set up the way that we were working quite positively. We'd always catch up online, or we'd always be in touch through WhatsApp, all that kind of stuff. But then when COVID kind of happened, we all reverted back to coming to Perth, and we do make a point of catching up every now and then. But I guess that's the beauty of being our own bosses, is creating that kind of flexible workspace and flexible workload, and having that work, although I try not to say work-life balance, it's just life balance, but making sure that, you know, we all know the tasks that we've got to achieve, and then being able to get our kind of life admin done at the same sort of time, it really works well with the way that we all work, and that touch wood, it keeps working that way for us.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of trust between us, and we all work different hours. I work better in the afternoon. The girls work better in the morning, but we trust we're all, you know, doing our thing and getting the job done. I think the challenge is when we have to employ somewhere else, and we're getting to that point. It's currently us three owning and running the business, and we're getting to the point where we're going to need to employ someone else. And how do we extend the team? Because we know each other so well, but how are we going to act as managers, and how are we going to bring someone into the team where there is a little bit of lack of structure, I would say, when you say, Jade? So yeah, that will be an interesting kind of challenge for us in the next 12 months for sure, because we're getting to the point where it can't just be the three of us anymore.
Okay, two things there. Number one, I can't believe that it's only the three of you still behind the business. That really does say something for your varied skill sets and also the level to which you perform them at. That's incredible. I think that'll come as a bit of a surprise to most of our listeners. And then the second thing that really jumps out is that you're also values aligned, you know, that you want to be, you know, you're all clearly very driven, but also the fact that you're, you know, this concept of life balance, not work-life balance, but being able to run your lives, trust one another, and for work to fit into that as well. I think definitely for scale, then having that values alignment and bringing on team with a similar values alignment is just so crucial, and a big part of what people miss when people are trying to put in, you know, okay, we're going to meet once a week and these are your KPIs and this is blah, 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 all of the things. It's like, if you actually start with that values alignment, then, you know, like about 70% of the work is done from there. So I will watch, interestingly, as you guys scale. I think that'll be really fun. And I mean, I'm sure that there's much demand for a fourth, fifth and sixth person at the moment. So next question that I wanted to move on to was, you know, going into an ice cream market, I mean, it's a heavily saturated market. There's a lot of ice creams out there. When Charlotte first came to you with the idea of ice cream, I mean, was there ever the thought of it's just too saturated, we'll never get cut through? Or were you thinking there really is a gap in the market for something? So I guess the question really is what encouraged you to step into that saturated market?
Yeah, I think the ice cream is a extremely saturated market, and it's also a very the critical thing is about ice cream is there's limited space. It's there's only so much freezer space in the supermarkets, in the grocery stores, and so generally that space is full. So someone's got to leave, or you've got to really find a gap in the market to make sure that your product's worth stockers putting it on in their freezers. And at the time, the market, at the time, it was really the start of the better for you ice cream category. So the better for you ice cream category was basically started when the plant-based ice creams started to come into the market, and more importantly, a little brand called Halo Top popped into the world, and that was focused on a low-calorie version of ice cream. But what was missing from the market was a low-sugar or sugar-free ice cream. So even Halo Top has a little bit of sugar in it, but at the time when we came into the market, there were zero low-sugar products in the ice cream aisle. And if you look at the data and consumer behaviour in every other aisle of the supermarket, people were really looking for low-sugar products. It had overtaken low-fat as kind of the thing people were looking for in terms of health attributes. And so whilst ice cream was an extremely saturated market and becoming even more saturated with the growth of Better For You, there was zero low-sugar products on the market. So there was a gap for us, and we saw potential in that. And that's why we decided to go into it.
That's where it was. Isn't that interesting that to the untrained naked eye that it does look like a saturated market, but then I imagine once you notice that there was no sugar ice cream, you're like, whoa, hold on a minute, that's actually a gaping hole right here.
And the other thing was that our product's a keto product. We don't advertise it on front and center as a keto product, but because it is low sugar, it is low carb, and when we launched was just around the time that the keto kind of lifestyle was really taking off around the world and in Australia. So our first customers were really the people that were seeking out low carb keto products, and so that is kind of how word spread about the product, because keto people that follow the keto lifestyle are very vocal online, they're very community driven, and so they share products back and forth online all the time. And so our product really gained momentum from spreading through keto circles, even though that it's a product that, you know, a low sugar product that is suitable for many different diet lifestyles and nutritional lifestyles.
Absolutely. And like I said, I first heard about it from my brother, who owns a CrossFit gym, you know, just got circulated around that community really, really quickly. So case in point right there. So next up, I was interested in what your product development phase looked like. So when Charlotte was sort of developing the product, I mean, did she just come to you both with one product, or what does it look like when you're developing ice creams? I mean, did you just sit around and taste like hundreds of types of ice cream, or were you quite particular in the flavors that you wanted to develop? How does that work?
Well, yeah, from the get-go, it was crowding around Charlotte's kitchen with all these different flavors popping out of her freezer and little oven bait trays, all that kind of stuff. And I guess from there it was a difficult phase, because we took a leap of faith, really. We had no idea if a kitchen recipe was going to translate commercially. So that took a lot of trial and error. And our original manufacturer was in Sydney, just a smaller manufacturer. Charlotte did a lot of work with him and using his food scientist background in terms of translating a home recipe into a commercial-sized recipe. We did a lot of work on the COGS, the cost of goods. That was a really big factor in determining whether this business was going to be successful or not. Unfortunately, with healthy products and healthy ingredients, carries a bit of a decent price point. So, I mean, we knew that we were going to enter the market as a premium product, which meant the product had to be premium. You know, it really had to deliver that premium taste and feel. From the beginning, it was just kind of tasting at Charlotte's house. And then we, again, took a bit of a leap of faith and threw all this cash into our first initial production run, because, of course, you can't just do a commercial production run with a couple of litres of ice cream. You've got to produce a fair amount. And with that came, of course, all the packaging ordering. And we originally started with stickers on tubs, and we got this big kind of huge pallet load of ice cream sent over, because we launched in Perth back in the end of 2017. So this ice cream delivery from Sydney to Perth, and how we store all that, and what we'd, it was a really interesting couple of months for us, not really knowing what we were doing, but just hoping that it was going to work. And we were really lucky in that it did. And we launched at at an event of the guys that I used to work for, Bar Pop at the Ice Cream Factory. It just so happened that they called it the Ice Cream Factory and we were producing ice cream, and it just was this beautiful little synergy of us being able to launch our product through one of their events. And from there, it just kind of took off. We did a little bit of online ordering service of I'd be delivering ice cream to people that were ordering online. And again, like Soph mentioned, the keto community really kind of helped us in that initial first stages of getting it out there. And the other thing that we were a little bit surprised about, we didn't really consider it being such a beautiful response, was the diabetic community. You know, for so long, the diabetics could not eat ice cream. There was just nothing out there because, of course, even the Halo Tops carried a bit of sugar and that would produce an insulin response for them. So for us, the response from the diabetic community and mothers of diabetic kids that were now going, wow, thank you so much for giving us this, you know, quiet relief, because diabetes is a 24-hour disease. It doesn't turn off. And the response from that reaction to the ice cream was really, really beautiful. But yeah, it's an interesting phase. And of course, like Sophie said, you know, there's lots of flavors on our list, but if it doesn't kind of match Charlotte's particular, you know, very fierce way that she wants to produce this ice cream, then it doesn't make the cut, unfortunately. And again, even a fruit ice cream can carry that bit of extra sugar content that we don't really want to have in our ice cream. So we are particular when it comes to our product and flavor development, but we do love it when we get samples sent over and we get to try them, and it's great.
Funnily enough, Shaz always says that, like, the first we launched with four products on the market, and the product development phase of launching those four flavors was the easiest product development that she had to go through so far. And that was taking a kitchen product that she'd made and commercializing it. The hard thing has been, you know, developing flavors after that, because I think when she's developing her first four flavors, she has all the time in the world to develop that. But, once you have those products on shelf and consumers are expecting more flavors to come out, whether it was the vegan flavors in the second year or flavors after that, we have a limited amount of time where we can get these flavors on shelf. And with supermarkets, that there's one range review a year where you have the opportunity to present new flavors to get them on shelf. And so there's all these deadlines involved in that product development process. And if Shaz doesn't think something's good enough, we need to make sure that, you know, there are flavors that we have lined up to present. So she'll always say that, yeah, it was getting the first products out and that development process was easy, and it's the product development after that that is the biggest challenge for her.
That's actually fascinating, and particularly for our listeners to hear. And I think that goes across most product-based businesses as well, that they do have all of this time to, you know, not all the time in the world, but you could have years developing that first product. And then once there's expectations, particularly when you're in the larger chains, this expectation of delivery that's upon you, which changes, I guess, the whole process of manufacturers and creation as well, you know, creation being this sort of beautiful, slow, maybe process, really dive, you know, let yourself go into, to all of a sudden being on the clock around things. So that is interesting. Now, I understand that you also had to make some changes to your original recipes to stay classified as an ice cream. So can you talk us through?
So when we first, there's, of course, you've got ice creams, then you'll notice on a lot of other tubs in the freezer, they have to say frozen desserts. And that that just comes down to the cream, the fat content. I'm not the food scientist, so I'll make sure I get this right, but it's the fat content within the ice cream. It has to be over a certain grams per liter, or 500 grams, I think it was, to be classified as an ice cream. And I guess when we first started touching on that product development and the first four flavors that we decided to go with, was because we were the first sugar-free ice cream on the market, we wanted to give people a simple swap. So we had the classics, your vanilla, your chocolate. We threw peanut butter in there because we just absolutely loved it, and then a mint chip. And they were the four flavors that we started with because they're the best sellers, you know, across the board in terms of the ice cream category. So we just wanted to be able to give people a really simple swap to go like, all right, I'm used to a normal vanilla ice cream. Let's try this sugar-free vanilla ice cream and not be too kind of crazy with our flavors. So, yeah, of course, wanting to kind of stay along the ice cream category, and we always wanted to be an indulgent ice cream to compete with the likes of the connoisseurs and those kind of, you know, major brands. So, yeah, we decided to up the fat a little bit and make sure that we could have ice cream on our tubs rather than frozen desserts.
It blew our minds that, well, because we actually got contacted by someone who told us that our product, we'd put ice cream on the label in the early days, and we got contacted by someone. It was that first kind of, you know, like threatening legal email that we'd got, and we were freaking out. Nothing eventuated from it, because we ended up, it was good news really, because we ended up changing the recipe, but it blew our minds that there was a legal standard for what actually you could classify as ice cream, or what, you know, what allowed you to put that word ice cream on your tub. And I think, like, for us, that was really important. If you look at, you know, if we didn't have ice cream on there, we had to look at the packaging in a way that cued ice cream in a different way, or we had to switch to the word frozen dessert, which you'll find, like, products like Halo Top or dairy, a lot of dairy-free products aren't actually ice cream, so they've got the word frozen dessert on there. And I think that was really important from a marketing perspective, but also because, you know, we had to feel confident in what our proposition was. You know, we weren't trying to compete on fat or calories. We were simply trying to create the lowest sugar content ice cream on the market. So we had to be confident with kind of that proposition, that changing the fat content to be able to put that word ice cream on the tub was the decision that we came to.
The things that you just wouldn't know until you step into the totally. Land of ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, we're here for the good times, not for the legal way.
Yeah. I can't remember, like, where that came from, Jade. It was like some...
City of Stirling or something, just a local, someone complained to our local government. It was really odd. We never really got to the bottom of it.
We think maybe it was like a competitor or someone that like had worked it out, but yeah, but it was a good thing in the end.
It was a blessing in disguise, to be honest.
A blessing in disguise, yeah. Yeah.
And this, I just want to actually put in a little side note for our listeners here, because I've had a few of those, not too many, but a couple of legal letters in the past as well. And they, none of them have ever amounted to anything. But when you're a small, like starting out business, they're terrifying to receive one of those. And I mean, I'm glad that you guys had the three of you together, but I know when I've had them and I've just been sitting there by myself, I literally, like, the whole world seems like it's going to implode. So just for our listeners, if you do get, and I think it happened twice to me, and both times it was a tiny little minor fix that just had to happen in the way that I'd worded something. It wasn't a big deal at all, being a service-based business. So just for any of our listeners, know that there will be a time, if you're running a business and you're making some waves, there'll be someone out there that's probably going to send some kind of nasty letter to you. Just keep breathing through it and cross-check it with a few people, because it's probably a much bigger thing. You feel like it's a much bigger thing than what it actually is. I just feel like that's a really, goodness, I could have saved like weeks of anxiety if someone had have told me that straight up. So
I think it's handy. Keep that in mind. Always handy to have a lawyer friend around if you can gather one of those. We ended up in our early phases, we got invited. Oh no, we submitted to be part of this thing called the Frank Program. So the Frank Program is run by an Australian legal firm called Hall & Wilcox, and they basically support early startups. And if you get, allowed into the Frank Program, they give you basically free legal advice, and it's a networking kind of opportunity. And in our first year, that was absolutely critical for setting our business up for where we've got it to now. So that's a really good one for any advice for early startups, is the Frank Program by Hall & Wilcox.
Good one. Good one. Write that down, folks. All right. So now that we've stepped into the serious side of the interview, getting Donata into major supermarket chains, I want to dive into a little bit about this, because I think there's pros and cons to it, and probably a whole bunch of navigation in between. So how did you approach this to start with? And was that the vision to start with?
The vision to start with was absolutely to get into the major supermarkets. For people that don't know much about the FMCG land or grocery land, the market's really split into a couple of different sectors, but for our purposes, it's independents and majors. So independents are grocers like your local supermarket down the road that's not a Coles. IGAs are considered independents because they're independently run and owned by individual shop owners. And the other side is obviously your big retailers like Coles, Aldi, and Woolworths. And from the start, we knew that, you know, we wanted this sugar-free ice cream to be as accessible to as many people as possible. So to do that, we wanted to get into the majors. But every business, every food business like ours kind of has to start in the independents. And you do that by getting distributors in each state who help sell your product into stores. And we were only a year in before we were extremely lucky. This doesn't happen to everyone. But we were actually contacted by Coles. So within the year on shelf, there was obviously a gap in the market that we filled, and the product really took off in the independent space. And we were in about 450 independent stockers around Australia within our first year. And that got us onto the radar of Coles. And we got a email from the category manager in Coles for ice cream in March, and he invited us to come in and basically pitch our product to him. And so we didn't really know what to do. We didn't know if we were moving too quickly. We didn't know if we could scale up that quickly to be able to like supply all the Coles, but we're actually in a really good place because we were about to move manufacturers, and just so that our new manufacturer that year could do the quantities that Coles needed. But basically we went into that meeting thinking they might trial us in a couple of stores, and at the end of the meeting he was like, so what about if we had you in 95% of stores, could you do that? And we were like, yeah. And we were like, I guess so, walking out of the meeting, phone calls, called Jade because she wasn't at that particular meeting. We're like, they said 95% of stores. We calculated how many stores that is, about 800 stores around Australia. And yeah, you just have to say yes and hope that you can pull it together, because obviously there's a lot of work in scaling up from, you know, just 450 independent stores to supplying an additional 800 stores around Australia. But yeah, we made it work. So yeah, we were extremely fortunate to have had that first break come to us. But for most businesses, it's a matter of, you know, approaching Coles or Woolies yourself. But yeah, the guy had heard about our product, and it obviously filled a gap in the Coles fridge that the category manager could see. And yeah, that's how we got our first break into Coles.
Okay, I need to pause here because just like you speak very calmly about this.
I know.
Oh, but hold on, before we even get to that, there was the 450 independent stores,
yeah,
which I'm just going to remind everyone, there's still three of you in the business, mm-hmm, with 450 independent stockers.
Yeah.
And then you go to this meeting and all of a sudden you very quickly doing the maths in your head, and all of a sudden there's an additional 800. So you've now got over 1,000 stockers, probably reaching most of Australia.
Yeah.
Like, what did it, I mean, yes, you called Jade. Like, what did the next few weeks look like? My goodness, just three of you to do this.
Oh, it was mad. It was madness. We worked with a lot of food startups these days. It's very expensive, obviously, to run your own factory and do all that. So a lot of food businesses like ours, we work with contract manufacturers to manufacture our product. So so it's not actually us in the factory, you know, making, or the three employees in the factory making the ice cream. So yeah, it was more the fact that we had to bank on, you know, getting new packaging, all new ingredients and supplies to produce the product within the time that we needed to implement at Coles. So it was celebrations, and then it was mad work doing all the things that we needed to do to get into Coles. And, you know, Jade was behind the scenes trying to learn all the supply chain systems, and, you know, we had to kind of bluff our way through knowing all this stuff. But we did it. Yeah. Jade, do you have anything to add there? I don't, yeah.
Yeah, Jade, let me flick to you in a minute, but I just wanted to say, like, yes, the manufacture was being done by someone else, but it's just the scale of it. I mean, all of a sudden everything increases, you know, the conversations increase, the social media increases, like the requests upon you increase. So it's not just sort of, oh, we'll just tell the manufacturer to up the quantities a little bit, like kind of everything sort of blows up. So what was your experience, Jade, as you were working along the supply chain there?
Well, I guess when we first started the distribution, it was me running that. Because we were not big enough to have our own distributor yet, we had to kind of run that ourselves. So organized just some frozen storage in WA. And because I was on the ground in WA, it just made sense to kind of launch in Perth. We had, you know, friends and family here that could kind of help us a little bit with that in terms of getting the word out there. We had friends that were in the grocery game. Yeah, one of my very good friends, Rob DiTullio, and his wife, Nadia, have got one of the best little organic shops down in South Frio. So they are our first stockers just because they believed in the product as well. So we had a lot of support here in Perth. So we'd get a heap of ice cream sent over into freezer space down here. I'd put on my big woolly jacket and my beanie and go in and pack all the orders and organise the delivery of that. And by the time we were getting kind of 20, 30, 40 stockers, I was like, oh, guys, I don't think I can do this anymore. It was such a big job. And that's when we ended up getting our first distributor on board in WA, Pemco. And, I mean, the food, even though the FMCG space is so ginormous in Australia, the distribution network is quite small. So we were really lucky in that Paul from Pemco here set us up with all the other guys in the other states. And from there, I just kind of ended up being able to step out of the actual functioning logistics and be able to kind of manage that process. So it was just speaking to the five different distributors in each state, making sure that the orders were getting there on time. Then every now and then communicating with store owners that just needed a little bit of extra kind of, padding along the way to get our products in. But I mean, we've got a product that people really believe in and people really love, and it's just a real point of difference as to what's out there. So, yeah, by me supporting those guys, they then support our business as well. And of course, Soph's behind the scenes, just working madly on the socials and the marketing and all that kind of stuff. And to be able to kind of support all those little aspects, it kind of creates this bit of a wave and really good momentum for the business. And one thing when we did go into Coles, we were really conscious of not cutting out that side of the market for us, because the independents, you know, it's locally owned, it's locally supported. We want to be able to support that that side of the economy as well. So we really made sure that our price point, or they could then compete with the Coles price point, because of course, everyone kind of hangs a little bit of a bad rap on the Coles and Woolies. But unfortunately, some products are just railroaded into that to save their business. And we started from the get-go that we wanted to be able to maintain a certain percentage in the independent market and not put all of our eggs in the one basket, because it is ruthless. Like we're not going to hide away from that, in that you really do have to, the whole pay-to-play system, and they can literally drop you if you're not performing. So we really made sure from a business perspective that we had the diversity and where our ice creams are going and being able to support the Coles kind of production, but also with the independent. Even though it is a smaller percentage, it's still something that we really value and we want to support, and we get a lot of support from them for our business.
That's so cool. It makes me just love you guys even more that you're doing that and supporting the independent grocers. And also just, so much goodness all the way around there, to be honest. So I guess going into these big chains, and this is something that I hear from a lot of businesses that are approaching it, were there any issues with retaining brand integrity through the process of getting into those majors?
Not really. We'd heard stories of, just where, really brands had to really sell their soul to get into the majors. But it wasn't the case with us. I think also maybe a couple of years ago that would have been the case more, but I think the majors really number one, I think the stores are growing from having range where they stock independents and independent brands and new and upcoming trend-driven brands. So I think that started to turn where, you know, they wanted to see their Vegemites in the store, but they also wanted to see their Mavis peanut butters, which is, you know, two different sides of styles of businesses. But also they started to get some bad PR from treating kind of smaller suppliers bad. So, you know, when we went in, it was pretty glorious. You know, their payment terms are really good for smaller independent brands like ours. We've had an amazing kind of partnership with Coles from the start and never felt like we had to sacrifice any of our brand or personal or business integrity to be there on shelf. But I also think it helps having something that they want, which is, you know, our product filled a place in the market and, a gap on their freezers and gave a reason for consumers that had lapsed from the category to come back to the ice cream freezer. And so we've found ourselves in a position where, you know, that they, you know, now they not only treat us as like a, you know, a small business, but we have some power in that freezer. Our double choc is now one of the best-selling ice creams in the ice cream freezer at Coles. So I think, you know, the proof is kind of in the numbers, and the partnership is only growing stronger from our performance as well. So yeah, in answer to your question, we haven't had the experience where we've had to sacrifice any kind of brand integrity. But you know, if we did get to that point, we wouldn't want to.
That's really interesting to hear, and actually quite heartening to hear as well, because I think you've hit the nail on the head saying, you know, a few years ago they did kind of get a bad rap, and I remember getting advice, you know, from a business mentor years ago, saying, you know, you don't want to get listed into the majors because then all the minors will drop you. You know, they don't want to be associated. And this seems just, it's changing, which is great to hear.
We were this close to saying no to Coles, weren't we? Because of that reputation. And thank God that we didn't, because we dived into it, and yeah, the experience has been wonderful. Jade, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly, because I was kind of the face of our logistics and sales and stuff, I made the point of going and meeting all of our distributors and told them that this is, you know, this was our, we're very transparent in the way that we run the business, particularly with our distributors. So I, you know, went face to face, had the meetings with them and kind of let them know that this was where we were going to, or we wanted to take the business. But I think they really appreciated the fact that we then went above and beyond to make sure that they could still compete with those pricing. So yeah, we copped a bit of our margin, but again, when we revert way back to when we started the business, we always had the foresight of wanting to be in the majors and just getting our ice creams into as many freezers as possible. So when we first set our pricing structure, we needed to have that little bit of buffer, knowing that, you know, if we wanted to get into the major, they'd want a certain percentage. So then how do we then continue to be able to give the independents that same sort of price point? Yes, it means that we might have to cop a little bit, but, you know, so we took a lot of time in deciding whether or not it was going to be feasible for the financial side of the business, as well as making sure that we weren't going to alienate ourselves and, you know, become one of these other brands that just ends up, you know, falling into that 90% of your business is in the majors. So yeah, it took a lot of personal contact and discussions and transparency with what we were doing from the business, and all the independent guys were on board with us, and I think they really appreciated the fact that we took the time out to be open and honest with them with where, and they're all so supportive now. They keep asking what's next, and you know, Charlotte, what's next. Yeah, so it's a really fun process to be a part of, and they're all super on board with helping us get the brand out there.
Yeah, credit. I mean, credit to Jade that managing those relationships with independents and like it really has only grown stronger as the business has gone on. So much so that, you know, yeah, independents are now asking what our next product is just like Coles is. So that, you know, that's a success to be celebrated really, because it is really hard to manage those two things.
Yeah, and transparency just won at the end of the day. This is really good stuff, and I'm really glad that our product-based businesses, well, all businesses, but particularly our product-based businesses, are hearing this as well, because it sounds like this space is really transforming, and it's nice just to hear quite openly that you can have your ice cream and eat it too, really, if you're prepared to do the work with those communications and with that real relationship building that you guys are clearly doing so well. So I was going to have one more question, but now I've got two. So I'll leave it up to you guys who answers which one. The first question is going to be, what would your tips be on approaching one of the majors like Coles? And then the second question would be, if you had a top three tips just for product-based businesses starting out, for the FMCGs in particular, what would that be? So over to you. We might start with top tips for approaching the majors.
Yeah, for approaching the majors, I mean, as I said before, we were really fortunate in the fact that Coles approached us, but now we're in a position where, you know, we would like to see more growth coming from other businesses. So we're in the position where we have to approach other people. And we're going through processes called range reviews at the moment, where you try to get your product into other stores. And I think the key thing is there, firstly, you've got to find someone that's relevant to your product in that business. So whether it's Coles, Woolies, Aldi, 7-Eleven, or, you know, even down the chain of independents, do your research, try and find that contact that you need to speak to get in, which is really hard to do, but LinkedIn's a great resource. Otherwise, just keep calling places and asking questions, because that key contact for your product in those retailers is key, and do your research on who you need to be talking to. The other thing is, I keep coming back to it, but it's about making sure that your product has a place on the shelf that you're pitching to. So, you know, if you're just coming out with another product that already exists, you've got to find that key point of difference. You know, the category manager looks at their products on shelf and whether they'll stock you based on, is it going to bring more sales to that category as a whole? So are you bringing new customers in, or are you going to cause them to buy more products in that category? So there's got to be a gap in the market that you're filling, and doing that market gap research and looking where your point of difference is and making that stands out is really important. And all these category managers and the big retailers, they need to be sold a story, and a story in numbers that's going to translate to sales to them. So doing your market research and making sure you have consumer research as to why your product is needed and what benefit to the category, but also the world that your product has. So for us, you know, we go into a lot of detail in our pitch documents regarding low sugar shopping behavior, or the prevalence of diabetes in Australia, and how this product will help, you know, those people with diabetes. So having, you know, some key facts and telling a story through numbers is really important when you approach the major retailers. What was your other question?
They were awesome answers. Oh, I'm like, yes, taking notes. These are great. And then my next question was, I guess just to round us out, just maybe your top three tips, if you wanted to hit with this one, Jay, just with for any FMCG just starting out.
Yeah, definitely. I've written my little notes here. Definitely the point of difference, and Soph touched on that. Have a point of difference with what you're looking to create, or finding those gaps, and how do you solve the problems that are out there. The second that I had was just margins and cash flow. I know it seems very cliche, but, you know, being able to negotiate payment terms and making sure that you've got that cash flow in the business. And I think we were quite smart, and I can definitely attribute a little bit of this to Charles as well. She interrogated the business from the get-go, and it took us months to be able to get to the point where we decided to even go ahead with it, and making sure that all the cost of goods, all the margins, all that you know, where was our cash flow happening, and the business plan, and getting all those back-end stuff. I know it's a bit kind of trivial, but it makes such a difference. And then the last thing is just having passion, because people really buy not only into the product but into the story, and having a passion for what you do. And when you're telling people about it, they tend to feed off. And I mean, I coming from, you know, a place where I was playing hockey for a living, basically, and that was my one big passion, and that's all I did. Every decision that I made was based around me playing hockey or making the next team. So to then be able to find this new passion in this business, people just love the fact that they love hearing the story. So it's having a real passion. And then, of course, work's not work anymore. It just becomes, you know, your day to day. Like, yeah, you get up and you're enthusiastic. You're feeding off you're being in such a positive environment. And it does. I mean, sometimes it gets super super hard, but it's that passion that just keeps you pushing through, and knowing that you're creating a difference for people out there. Just it's a really wonderful thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I've got one more to add too, and it sounds really obvious again, but packaging. I think a lot of people don't, they launch with a product and they think, oh, we'll just, you know, the product will sell itself. But even if you don't have the point of difference, I know that's what we've been talking about, but if you have really sexy packaging, people will pick it up and look at it. So, you know, we were lucky enough to have that point of difference, or that find that gap in the market. But, you know, the packaging for us was a real game changer in our case, because our packaging stood out from the freezer. We removed all the clutter, and it was just this colourful rainbow in the fridge. And, you know, even though that people can't see the sugar-free proposition from afar, it would, you know, bring people closer in to kind of take a look at the product without having to sell anything yet. So I think packaging is really critical, and getting that right in the early stages. Plus, if your product blows up and you haven't quite got that packaging right, it can be really costly when you're a few years in to rebrand and repackage everything. So, you know, I would say make sure you get that packaging looking really great, and try and make sure it looks different to everything else, or all your competitors on shelf. It's a really easy thing that can really be overlooked in the beginning.
Perfect. Well, packaging and passion, that feels like a great place to round up there. Sophie and Jade, thank you so much. We've traversed an incredible amount here. I mean, from starting off with three founders and how you navigate that, through to product development and your manufacturing, going from still quite surprised that there's the three of you, and going from that 450 independents, you know, the miners, through to the majors, and then, you know, how that relationship has been for you. And again, really surprised that that's transformed into such a lovely relationship that it sounds that you have with those majors. So congratulations on everything you've built. It's absolutely incredible. I'm sure everyone is heading straight out to buy more and more Donata ice cream now, like they need an excuse. But thank you so much for being so generous with your time, with your knowledge. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Prue. It's like we all have great passion, and we love to talk about this business. So thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you never want to miss an episode, be sure to subscribe over on Apple Podcasts. I'm also dropping some juicy business building tips on Instagram. So head over to @ownerscollective to join in the fun. And finally, folks, if you're hungry for a deep dive into the entrepreneurial story behind some of the best businesses around, be sure to listen to my other podcast, One Wild Ride, where we talk all things good business, positive impact, and epic adventures with the most inspiring entrepreneurs around.